All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me. My name is Victor Nieves. This is the Deep Dive Podcast, and today we're going to be diving into the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. Now, this has been relatively controversial, and a lot of people on the left and the right have been spreading information about it that's just straight up not accurate. Some people on the right are saying that it's going to like be the end of the world. Some people on the left are saying that this is going to be the saving grace for all of the homosexual people out there, that it's going to revolutionize their lives. The reality is that neither of those claims are true. So we're going to talk about this specific, the name of it actually is H.R. 8404. So if you'd like to follow along, you can go to congress.gov, search up H.R. 8404. You can read the entire thing. It's only about like two or three pages. It's very, very quick, very short. In fact, we might just read the whole thing on today's podcast. I'm not entirely sure because there is some misinformation. So just to put that stuff to rest really quickly, we'll talk about what is this bill. Like what is being done? What's being proposed? And the basic idea, to give it a real quick cliff notes, the basic idea of this bill would be to codify or to put into federal law something that is very similar to the Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell. And if you're not familiar with the Obergefell decision, rest assured it's not the end of the world. The Obergefell decision is the one that legalized gay marriage in all 50 states. It was a very big, you know, landmark decision, yada, yada. That's the reason that two men or two women can go and walk into a courthouse and receive a marriage certificate today. In some places, you didn't used to be able to do that. So that's Obergefell. And the goal of the Respect for Marriage Act is, so they claim, to essentially just codify that, just to put it in federal law, because they're kind of worried. They're, for whatever reason, I think that their concerns are ill-founded, but they're worried that the Supreme Court is going to overturn Obergefell, and they're going to make gay marriage go to the states again, which we can dive into the constitutionality of the court getting in the business of marriage, or the federal government getting in the business of marriage, or even the state government getting into the business of marriage. And maybe we'll do that if we have time. But for right now, let's just talk about what this bill actually says, because now we know what the goal of it, at least what the espoused goal of this bill is. Let's look at what it actually says. In fact, it is so short, I think I will just quite literally read the entire thing. So section one, it just starts off, says, short title, this act may be cited as the, quote, Respect for Marriage Act. Section two, findings. Congress finds the following. One, no union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. Finding number two, diverse beliefs about the role of gender in marriage are held by reasonable and sincere people based on decent and honorable religious or philosophical premises. Therefore, Congress affirms that such people and their diverse beliefs are due proper respect. Finding three, millions of people, including interracial and same-sex couples, have entered into marriages and have enjoyed the rights and privileges associated with marriage. Couples joining in marriage deserve to have the dignity, stability, and ongoing protection that marriage affords to certain families and children. Section 3. Repeal of section added to Title 28, United States Code, by Section 2 of the Defense of Marriage Act. So this is a word salad there, but it's repealing the Defense of Marriage Act that says that Section 1738C of Title 28, United States Code, is repealed. Section 4, full faith and credit given to marriage equality. Chapter 115 of Title 28, United States Code, as amended, by this act is further amended by inserting after section 1738B the following. And this is where we start getting in more to the nitty gritty. So it says, certain acts, records, and proceedings and the effect thereof. No person, this is the meaty part, right? No person acting under color of state law may deny, and then it lists out the things that they may not deny. So no person, that's important, remember that language. No person acting under color of state law may deny full faith and credit to any public act, record, or judicial proceeding of any other state pertaining to a marriage between two individuals on the basis of sex, race, ethnicity, or national origin of those individuals, or a right or claim arising from such a marriage on the basis that such marriage would not be recognized under the law of that state on the basis of sex, race, ethnicity, or national origin of those individuals. And we're going to get around to this here in just a second, because that's the problem that a lot of Republicans are having. A lot of conservatives, one of the problems of many is people are getting caught up, rightfully so, in the part where it says no person acting under color of state law. No person. What exactly does that mean? See, the language of this bill is left, in my opinion, intentionally ambiguous. Because when you read this, you have to ask yourself the question, okay, does this pertain to a person like the governor or a person, you know, some sort of an elected official that's trying to violate this federal law? Or does that apply to me? Does that apply to you, your pastor? For example, is your pastor a person who could get sued because they don't, for example, honor a homosexual marriage because a pastor says, no, that's not a legitimate biblical marriage, a biblical marriage, one sanctioned by God in the Christian faith, is one between one man and one woman. So I'm not going to acknowledge that. Does your pastor, if this law is passed completely, does your pastor now run the risk of getting sued if he stands up for the biblical worldview that he has every religious right to do? That's the question. In fact, several Republican senators have proposed amendments. You know, they wanted to clarify. So they bring forward an amendment trying to see, hey, just so that we can have some clarity here, you're not saying that individuals, right, that pastors or even just a normal everyday Joe, you're not saying that they could be sued, right? And the Democrats refuse to put that in. They refuse to accept that amendment because they want this. That's why I said they want this to be purposefully ambiguous. The reason I could say that with a great degree of confidence is because there's no other reason that you would refuse that kind of thing. There's no other reason that you would refuse to make it very clear that this is only talking about, for example, a state actor or an elected official or, you know, some sort of state law prohibiting or going against this or something like that. They don't want that. They intentionally want it to be that way. You know, another another issue that conservatives, real conservatives, are having with this is the redefining of marriage. See, marriage is defined in the West, it always has been and hopefully always will be, marriage has been defined by the biblical worldview, the one we mentioned just a second ago, that marriage is a holy union, it's a religious thing, where you take one man and one woman, you bring them before God Almighty, and you say the two become one. And that is a holy marriage. They agree and blah, blah, blah. That is the definition of marriage. Marriage, as a Christian, marriage has always been and will always be, real marriage, will always be between one man and one woman. In the Christian faith, there is no such thing as a godly sanctioned gay marriage. That just doesn't exist. Well, this is the government stepping in where they have no power, no authority to do so. If you look at Article 1, Section 8, the powers of Congress, you'll find nothing that gives Congress the authority to step in and start defining marriage, because marriage is an institution of the church. It's not mentioned in the Constitution. It's not mentioned. There is no constitutional right to marriage. Marriage is an institution wholly of the church. So for the government to step in and redefine marriage to something different than it has always been, it's always been one man and one woman up until about 6 minutes ago with the Obergefell decision, it's always been one man and one woman. Now, the government's stepping in and they're redefining marriage to be marriage. Marriage is anything that we want it to be as long as it's between two individuals. Two individuals, that's all that they care about. It's two individuals. And that's it. So they're redefining the definition of marriage. And if you're a conservative, you shouldn't be for that. Another thing is, if you're a Christian and you're a conservative, well, then you should be trying to conserve culturally and etc., you should be trying to conserve the biblical worldview. And the biblical worldview obviously is against that. In fact, you know, the Republican Party platform and conservatives, how are conservatives, you know, there's some air quotes here around the word conservative. There's some conservatives that are advocating for legalized gay marriage. They're advocating for the state to go outside of its constitutional authority and stick its hand and stick its nose into the business of the church. Those so-called conservatives are more liberal today in the year 2022. They're more liberal than Barack Hussein Obama was when he was running for office in 2012. Barack Obama, during his re-election campaign, campaigned on the fact that marriage is a holy religious institution, and it is the wedding of one man and one woman. That was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden. How are these conservatives today more liberal than the Democrats of 2011? If that's you and you call yourself a conservative, I don't know what you're conserving, because you're not doing a very good job at it. You are more liberal on this subject than Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or Joe Biden were. Now, they've said that they switched, but they only did that because the political winds made it expedient. After Obergefell, it was more popular, and then they were like, oh yeah, we've believed this all along. But you've become more liberal than Barack Obama. So there's so many issues with this. Obviously, we have the very concerning question of whether or not religious people are going to have their freedom of religion infringed upon, where they get sued, or potentially the bill goes on and gives the attorney general authority to charge people and et cetera, and people can be sued and blah, blah, blah. Section B under certain acts, records, and proceedings and the effect thereof says enforcement by the attorney general. The attorney general may bring forward civil action in the appropriate United States district court against any person. Did you catch that again? Any person who violates subsection A. Not any government official, not any government institution, not any state, but any person. See, this is intentional wording. The people who write these, they're all lawyers. They know what they're doing. When they write stuff to be ambiguous, they're doing it on purpose, not because they're stupid or they didn't know a better way. It's not like they couldn't have come up with a more clear and transparent way to write this. They did it this way on purpose, and then they rejected amendments. So the way that this reads leaves a massive glaring question mark on whether or not you, your pastor, your mom, your grandma, etc., could be sued for saying that marriage is between one man and one woman. And if you're a church, for example, and you say, no, I'm not going to treat you, if you're going to come to my church, we're not going to treat you as if you were a legitimately married couple. That's not how this works. If you were to do that, there's a real chance that you could be sued, because it says any person who violates this kind of thing. See, that's the reason that real conservatives are having an issue with this. It does nothing, right? If you're like the biggest gay rights person in the world, this does nothing new. This doesn't add anything to the law. We already have Obergefell. Obergefell already legalized gay marriage. This adds no new protections, no nothing. In fact, the only time this could ever come into effect is in the unlikely event that Obergefell is overturned, which it could happen. Would I be opposed to that? No, absolutely not. I'm not going to lie and pretend that I believe things that I don't. Obviously, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Obergefell being overturned, because the United States government has no legitimate role to play in the institution of marriage. Now, where they've kind of got themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place is there are certain tax privileges, right? At the beginning, where it talks about how there are certain rights and privileges that come along with being married. Well, you can file your taxes together, you get certain breaks, you get this and that. So there are certain things that the government has given as privileges to married couples. And because of that, now gay people are saying, well, we want those same privileges. We also want the same tax code. And to that, I would simply say, well, if that's all you really care about, if that's truthfully all you want, then form some sort of a civil union and we can grant the same tax privileges and et cetera. But that's not what it is. At the end of the day, it's about redefining the most important institution in the entire country, and that is the family. And at the root of every family should be marriage. And if we redefine what marriage is, if we take these social institutions that are the backbone, the indisputable backbone of American society, not just American, but Western society, if we take them and we start to reconstruct and redefine them into whatever is currently fashionable, then we lose that anchor of what it really always has been. And we're seeing this on display. I mean, we're watching this happen in real time. You only have to go so far as Obergefell to now. And you look at what has happened. You know, way back in time, at the time of Obergefell, when gay marriage was first legalized, you had a lot of people who were saying that it was going to become a slippery slope, that this was going to be a long-term issue. If we redefine marriage, if we redefine the family, where does it stop? You know, people were posing these questions forever ago. They were saying, well, where does this end? At what point do we stop? Now that we've opened Pandora's box and we're starting to redefine these social institutions like marriage and the family, where is this going to stop? Are we going to have, two men adopting a child and raising it as if it's their child? Are we going to have, transgender stuff? Are we going to have bestiality? Are we going to have drag queen story hour? Are we going to have children being prescribed hormone blockers and having their breasts lopped off and double mastectomies? Where does this end? And the reality is, at that time, people made fun of them. They said, oh, you're just harping and moaning about a slippery slope. That's fallacious. There won't be children getting double mastectomies and having their uteruses cut off and their penises lopped off. That's never going to happen. People just want to be able to get married. It's just two consenting adults. They just want to go and get married. And next thing you know, here we are. Next thing you know, that was the greatest. And listen, I'm not even trying to draw some sort of an undue conclusion. I'm not saying that that's solely responsible for where we're at. But the slippery slope was very real. It all started then. It all started when we first opened Pandora's box and we started to redefine what these terms are. And if you are a Christian and a conservative, I don't know how you can be for gay marriage or for something that fundamentally redefines marriage and redefines the family. I don't know how you can be more liberal than 2012 Barack Hussein Obama and call yourself a conservative. You can call yourself a lot of things, but you're not a conservative, at least not socially. I don't know what you're conserving. If you can't even conserve the family, what is it exactly that you're conserving? So anyways, back to this so-called Respect for Marriage Act. Big picture, if it gets passed, frankly, nothing actually changes. Not a lot changes. You're not going to notice a huge difference in your day-to-day life. The time where this would come into effect, most strongly, the time that this would come into effect is if Obergefell is overturned, or this is a big important one, or if the courts interpret the language of this law so as to allow pastors and individual persons to be sued. Now, me personally, in my constitutional analysis of that, would be that that's extremely unconstitutional. You can't have someone be sued. You can't have a clergyman or a pastor be sued because they said, no, our religion, this church, we view marriage as between one man and one woman. Personally, I think that would, any infringement on that would be struck down by the Supreme Court. That's just my thought. But who knows, right? That's the big question. And fighting that legal fight will likely ruin somebody's life. Because if this is passed, someone will try. And legal fees are really expensive, especially if you lose. So that could be the kind of thing where, depending on the interpretation, depending on the language, if there's no amendments made, which are much needed, then individuals could be getting sued. But outside of that, not a whole lot changes. It doesn't add any protection for gay people. It does add a protection, I guess an additional one, to codify interracial marriage. Interracial marriage is obviously protected, but they're afraid that if Obergefell gets overturned, there's another very famous case. I think it's Lovington v. Virginia, but I may be mistaken on that. That was the interracial marriage case where the Supreme Court upheld the legality of interracial marriage. So, at the end of the day, If you're a conservative, I don't think you should be supporting this. If you're an elected official, I don't think you should be supporting this. It causes undue harm, or at least opens up the potential for causing undue harm to clergymen and religious people. It offers zero new protections in any way, shape, or form. Like, if you're the biggest LGBTQAI plus advocate in the world, it accomplishes nothing for that cause. Like, literally nothing. And it's pointless. So anyways, that's my deep dive onto it. It's only, like I said, only like 2 or 3 pages. Again, if you'd like to find it all, go to congress.gov, search for H.R. 8404. You should be able to find the entire thing. You know, read it. Don't take my word for it. Probably only take you maybe 10 minutes, maybe 8 minutes. We read 3/4 of the thing, you know, just right here on the podcast. So anyways, today's podcast was actually suggested, the subject. It was a suggestion by our friend Luke. He is a supporter over on Locals. So big shout out to Luke. I appreciate it. It was a fantastic idea, you know, covering this Respect for Marriage Act, because there's a lot of controversy. Some people who claim to be conservatives, maybe there are, maybe they don't know anybody better, you know, maybe they're not. Some so-called conservatives supporting it. Some conservatives who are getting a little bit hysterical. They're making claims that aren't accurate, kind of blowing it out of proportion. Some liberals that are doing the same thing. So now you know. Now you are probably the most educated person you know regarding the hilariously named Respect for Marriage Act, the Disrespect for Marriage Act, the Redefining Marriage Act, the Opening Up Clergymen to Getting Sued Act. So there you go. Anyways, that's this week's podcast. If you're not a supporter on Locals, be sure you become one. You know, all of the supporters obviously get the opportunity to make suggestions such as today's show. And a lot of times I put up polls and stuff. If you're a supporter on Locals, you get early access to the podcast. This comes out on Thursdays for local supporters. Everybody else has to wait till Saturday. So you get early access, you get to vote, you get to do that stuff, plus some exclusive content, and it helps, you know, it helps support the page. So anyways, that's all I've got for you today. Until next time, keep me in your prayers, keep your country in your prayers. God bless.